98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
DeAndre Ayton is soft, or maybe he's just too nice. Either way, as we near the end of his rookie season, he remains on the periphery of the most entertaining, impactful rookies to enter the NBA in 2018. Now, maybe you feel differently, but I just watched a video from a real smart basketball observer who pointed out that Phoenix ranks last in the league in points surrendered in the paint, that the ball is too easily thrown over Ayton, around Ayton, through Ayton, and it really bothers me that on the offensive end, he doesn't throw down dunks with ferocity and exclamation points, but this observer said it's much more devastating that he never flies around on defense, creating havoc with his length. A little bit harsh. Yeah, so be it, because we can all wonder this. We heard that DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker were going to be Shaq and Kobe 2.0. Now, I don't know if what DeAndre Ayton does well will ever intersect with what Booker does well. So how's that pairing going to work out? And here's the question I can't get out of my head. By last year's draft, it became commonplace to say that Ayton was the best player in the draft. The talk was so ubiquitous that it almost became true, which is a recurring problem in modern society. But maybe it was never true. And maybe, just maybe, he was the wrong fit all along. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Two great locations, one great experience. Check them out online at ChapmanBMW.com. Jarrett, remember Chapman BMW had that great car that you love, the exploding colors everywhere?
Absolutely.
I got to show you this one that they had in their showroom yesterday. It is the Batmobile, and I want to get your take on it.
Okay. Tweet it out.
I'm going to. Now, before we get to DeAndre Ayton and the Phoenix Suns, we're going to...
Let's put that off as long as possible.
Listen, we don't have to make this contentious. Okay? Point number one, Kyler Murray meeting with the Arizona Cardinals. Big deal? Formality, due diligence, whatever.
Both.
All of it.
It's a big deal.
All of the above.
And it's a formality.
And it's a formality.
And it's diligence.
And it's due.
Yeah.
We can get more into this in a little bit, but what is it that the Cardinals want to get out of this meeting?
Intelligence. Personality traits. Conversation skills. All of those things. I mean, I don't know what the visit will consist of. It said they're visiting with him. It didn't say they're working him out.
Yeah.
It's just interesting because, like, what could he say or do that would truly affect their opinion of him?
Yeah.
They're probably looking for reasons not to be turned off, quite honestly.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. I'll bet you you're probably right. It's probably just, okay, how you doing? What's going on? How you looking?
Please,
you
don't
5'11 yet?
Please don't say anything stupid.
Right.
It is amazing, though, that the one thing that he's the best at is the one thing he's not doing in this whole thing. He got measured. He got weighed. He threw. He got interviewed. But he's not going to run. That we think he's the best at.
Well, and we've explained why. Okay? We've explained, at least we've given our thoughts on why that is. He's too heavy to run the number he wants. The number doesn't, the number will not help him or the Cardinals. So, it's not about athletes showing what they got. It's about protecting what they have.
Pretty much.
See? All right, so we'll get back into the Cardinals in just a little bit as it relates to that. But before we move on to the Suns and DeAndre Ayton, if you ever wondered why Vinny and I embark on dueling gambos, we're about to show you why. But I gotta say this. In the moments before Baker Mayfield showed up at Bevy last Friday, and in the moments that you and I got off air at 2 o'clock, I don't know why we started doing dueling gambos in the bar. We just started doing Baltimore Orioles for some reason. And it was almost like people were coming out of the woodwork to chime in. There was a gravitational pull to it that could not be denied. If you want to know why we do dueling gambos, here is John Gambadoro in an interview with Mike Vaccaro, who is a sports columnist at the New York Post, regarding St. John's basketball.
Mike, you know, I grew up on St. John's basketball, going to those games at Alumni Hall. My best memories of the, you know, the 84 Final Four team with Mullen and Wennington and of course, Walter Berry, Mark Jackson. I even remember Marco Baldi. But it's been a long time since St. John's has been good. From the time Carnesecca left, they've had a lot of coaches come in and out. Guys, Norm Roberts was terrible. Jarvis, Fraschilla, Mahoney. They just haven't been able to find that coach that could get him back to prominence. Is Chris Mullen that guy?
Walter Berry.
I can pinpoint the very moment. It was long before this. And I may have told this story before. Mm-hmm. That where Dueling Gambos was born. Before we had this show, I was still working full-time in the web department, and when one of the shows would need a fill-in host, they'd call on me. So I was filling in with Gambo for Dave Burns. We were at some car dealership, and we're sitting there having a discussion, and lo and behold, somebody walks into the showroom of the car dealership while we're on the air wearing an old powder blue early 80s Kansas City Royals jersey with the name Willie Mays Akins on the back.
Oh, yeah.
Akins. It turns out it was Willie Mays Akins.
And he's wearing his own uni.
Yes, and he came by and he was like giving information about a book that he had written. Because he had a pretty interesting life, Willie Mays Akins. Especially during those days in the 80s when he was a good baseball player. So that immediately sparked Gambo into, you remember those teams? And he went through
Malik Sealy, Felipe Lopez.
No, he didn't go St. John's. He actually
Frank
went
McGuire.
Kansas City Royals.
Oh, got it. Right. Got John Mayberry, so Frank White.
From that moment on, I noticed that was a common occurrence. And that's where Dueling Gambos was born. But
Freddie Patek. That's just great.
John Wathen.
Now, and listen, I got love for the Red Storm as well. When I was in Chicago, Bill Wennington was one of the greatest sources I've ever had in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Dude would tell you anything. I love that guy.
He was just at the Suns game last night.
Hey, he's the best. Yeah. So that's why. There you go. The Dueling Gambos in the span of one question. Walter Berry, Chris Mullen.
He left out Steve Lavin on the list of coaches, though.
Okay.
Harvey. There you go. I know you wanted to have a little fun with that. And there, you have the explanation.
Are you done having fun with it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right, let's talk some Phoenix Suns basketball, shall we? The analysis of DeAndre Ayton that I cited was part of the Ringer series of rookie midterms.
Okay.
It was a 9-minute video.
I started watching that video, and then I thought, I just don't have time to devote to 9 minutes.
Okay.
I was pressed for time in the prep process.
I gave it all. It wasn't overly negative, but it raised a lot of questions. And that last question to me is really the most interesting thing, and that is DeAndre Ayton established as the number one player in the draft going into the draft. It just became so repeated by everyone that it almost came true. And it kind of speaks to Jared. I want you to chime in on this. You were the one guy who watched DeAndre Ayton as a college player, and the one guy who watched every minute of him. You were less into DeAndre Ayton than other people might have been because you saw all the flaws.
I'm a negative person in general, but I also often, when I watch someone a lot, I notice their flaws more than their positives.
All right, what are some
you
of
guys
our
included?
Flaws?
No, I don't want to hear it.
I could do it as Dueling Gambos. Self-hating,
self-loathing, yeah. Talks too much,
interrupts people. I coined the term early this season, the empty stat line for DeAndre Ayton, because to me, his numbers are almost always there, but when the game ends, you feel like he didn't really have an impact. There's no real memorable plays. More often than not, they're not winning, especially with the Suns. And I don't know. It feels like he's a good player who could be a great player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of the way I feel. And so I'm watching this 9-minute video, and it might sound hypercritical to you or to other people, and it might seem counterintuitive in the face of these historic stats that he puts up, okay? the lack of activity, the lack of ferocity, the lack of activity on defense, the lack of ferocity overall bothers me. And I'm sorry, you can take your numbers all the way to the bank. Those two things make me, wonder what exactly is this guy's future going to be in the NBA?
He's going to be a multiple-time All-Star.
Okay. All right. He's number one pick in the draft.
Look, yeah, he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done nothing to determine that he was not worthy of that pick. Nothing.
You use the number one pick on a guy who's 7'1".
Yes. Did you draft him for his offense or his defense?
Well, I would hope you drafted him for both.
I mean,
no.
Was he lauded as a great defensive player in college?
No.
So
he wasn't.
So elevating from 1 year of college basketball, the light bulb should automatically go on that he should know how to. We use this concept all the time about the NBA is filled with guys who maybe aren't the most talented, but they know the lay of the land. They know how to play.
If he was this bad on defense, he should not have been the number one pick.
How has he been that bad?
Yes.
Have you watched the other players?
Phoenix is last in the league in rim protection. Every metric.
He's playing with four wings on a nightly basis
and doing nothing.
Because he's got to be the last line of everybody else's deficiencies.
All he does is watch. He watches.
He watched his way into three steals and three block shots last night.
He doesn't always watch. He'll have an occasional block. But the havoc he could create and chooses not to bothers me. And the fact that he doesn't hammer down anything bothers me. Amari Stoudemire, when he dunked, he made him impact statements. And look,
it's pronounced Stoudemire.
They were ferocious things that would change the course of games. DeAndre Ayton doesn't have it in him. And, it's fine. He's a nice guy. Great kid. Super honest. Real introspective. Very self-aware. That's all well and good. But there was supposed to be on-court connection between Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. And what this Ringer analysis says at the end was the intersection of their two games, it's hard to see. It's hard to see where one will complement the other and vice versa. Son's got to figure that out. DeAndre Ayton's got to grow up. He's got to grow a mean streak. He's got to cut some teeth.
Yeah, because you know who you are at 20 determines who you're going to be for the rest of your NBA career.
No, no, not at all.
That's basically what you're saying, is that you drafted DeAndre Ayton and you expected this finished product offensively and defensively, and damn it, 66 games into his career, he should be wreaking havoc every night. Name me one player who ever did that at that position in the history of the NBA, not named Lou Alcindor. I'll wait.
Basketball is a positionless game now. I don't know. Why would I have to name
Suns,
a position?
The Suns actually determined that it's not positionless by drafting if you want to use the term, old school center. It's not positionless. Mm-hmm. He's still matched up against guys of equal size and skill level.
Okay, look, and again, I appreciate his offensive skill. It comes very, very easy to him. It doesn't take anything but effort to play good defense, especially when you're 7'1" and have that athletic.
That's not true. You could exert 110% effort on every defensive possession, and if the other four guys are not pulling their weight defensively, you are going to be a bad defensive team. And I'm not saying that's the case with DeAndre Ayton. I'm also not claiming that, again, 66 games into his NBA career, this is who he's going to be. I don't think the Phoenix Suns invested the top overall pick for the first 66 games or to try to invest in a Rookie of the Year award. By the way, everybody's golden boy Luka Doncic kind of hit the wall too.
He just had a triple-double last night.
Let me ask you a question. Just, have you seen... Ayton should not be a finished product, obviously, and this is not... He could get better. But has he even had a game where he's like... shown the glimpse of brilliance, the one dominant game all year.
You don't think that's happened?
Like a 35-15 game.
Again.
Where he's taken over. I know it's not all his fault.
For him to take over, he needs to be fed the ball. He had 28 points in a quarter.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
And there's some truth to that, because part of this Ringer analysis was that it's obvious, very clear, that DeAndre Ayton needs to be fed. He needs to be fed. And that's partially on the Phoenix Suns. But I think that's kind of the point. In team building and extrapolating this, why was it so obvious that this is the guy they wanted to fit into this? Where's the fit? That's just my question. I'm not trying to get heated with this.
Again,
I'm just because I like who this kid is.
And this is not the team that the Phoenix Suns are going to have for DeAndre Ayton's entire career either. At some point, I think probably they'll realize they need a point guard. I think at some point they'll realize they need some athletic bigs to go along with them.
Defend the rim. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So, but I don't think you should have to beg a 7'1" monstrously athletic guy who runs hard sometimes and sometimes lugs up and down the court to just create havoc in the lane. Fly through the lane with arms flying sometimes. Do that.
Again.
He just watches so much.
Let's use current basketball. Name me a five right now that dominates every single night on both ends of the floor.
It's hard to do. I mean, I agree with you. It's hard to do. But again, this is the number one pick in the draft, and he was supposed to be this hybrid guy, this guy that was going to do all of that.
It's not over.
Okay.
It's not even started yet.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, when you hear the word, I mean, by basically lobbing the term soft, that's a label that a lot of guys never shake because it's so prevalent in the public's thinking and getting it out. I think it's a complete disservice to a kid who's learning how to play in the NBA. If this is year four and we're still seeing this from DeAndre Ayton,
okay,
by all means, I'll change my tune.
Yeah, because
then, if he's averaging 16 and 10.
Oh, yeah, because Trae Young and Luka Doncic, they've come into the league with such wonderment of everyone around them, and they've deferred so much. The only person in at the Suns arena with a better view than you is him.
I don't know. My view wasn't very good last night. Jim Boylan stood in front of me the whole damn night.
Now here's the other Suns-related story that I wanted to mention, because I mentioned this at the very beginning, and this is one of these stories that I just want to throw this out there and get your opinion on this. Okay. Bram Resnick of Channel 12, sort of a news houndy kind of guy, really great reporter, writes this. 9 days after the Phoenix City Council approved a controversial deal to renovate Phoenix Suns' home arena, Suns owner Robert Sarver donated $50,000 to a campaign PAC supporting a councilwoman who cast a crucial vote. That donation to Councilwoman Vanya Guevara last month came after she flipped her no vote to a yes with Sarver's pledge to spend $2.6 million on Head Start programs in her district. Okay, let's stop right there. The story was framed that the Suns owner is rewarding politicians who flip their votes for him. Couldn't you read that story as Phoenix politicians leveraging what they had to help the community and Robert Sarver agreeing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm not saying this to defend him. I'm just saying when you look at this money, it doesn't necessarily match the headline, if you will. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay. Sarver followed up with a donation to Guevara with a $100,000 contribution to a firefighter PAC backing the mayoral campaign of Councilman Daniel Valenzuela, also a supporter of the arena deal. All right, it's just one of those things where it looks kind of fishy, but maybe everyone did a good thing for the community in leveraging that vote, because the arena renovation deal didn't look that exorbitant to begin with, okay? And then you use it to the point where you get community investment from the owner in return for that. That, to me, is a way to flip a story in a headline that I guarantee you will get more play nationally when this starts getting into the national churn. That's all.
I'm not as familiar with the details of the story as you are. I'll admit that flat out.
Yeah, okay.
And cynical me, I look at something like this and I say, this happens all the time. This is the way politics works. This is the way deals get done. I understand that. Maybe my bigger frustration in all of that is that there was somebody on the city council that was against arena renovation at one point, because losing a basketball team or not having the Suns play in downtown Phoenix, regardless of how you feel about the owner, would have been a loss for everybody with an interest in downtown Phoenix. It just would have been. That's the way I view it. Maybe that's naive in thinking. And again, without a deeper knowledge of the situation. I'm not really that shocked by any of this.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, all right.
All right, a couple of polls I put up here, Suns related. Who will have a better NBA career, DeAndre Ayton or Zion Williamson?
I'm going to say right now, DeAndre Ayton, because he's got a one-year head start and has actually done something in the league. We have one guarantee in this question, and that is one of those players will have played NBA games.
And all his shoes have stayed together the entire year. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah.
Better NBA career, DeAndre Ayton or Zion Williamson?
I don't think there's any question. It's going to be Zion Williamson. There's not even a question in my mind. You can apologize, you can defend, you can embrace what he's given so far. You can give him time to grow, you can give him time to mature. Look at the ferocity difference between those two players. That's all I'm saying. And it's, he watches too much, he defers too much, he compliments others too much, just not my thing.
You watched DeAndre Ayton against ASU last year a couple times, right?
I did, he was awesome.
Yeah, he was a beast.
Yep.
College level. Different animal.
All right,
completely
so
different animal. And
results.
We've seen Zion Williamson be consistently ferocious at the NBA level. What happens
okay,
when
we'll
somebody
okay.
What happens when somebody shuts him down in the NBA? How does he react? Maybe he's got a different makeup altogether. I don't know. Maybe in the long term, you're right. I just think it's completely unfair.
Okay.
Levy this stuff in real time.
I think it's completely wrong and lowering standards to think that a guy like that, it's okay to just kind of let things happen all over the rim. You know, and again, it's not just me and it's not just Jarrett. Go listen to that 9-minute dissemination from the rim. And I'm not saying to you, go listen to it. It's not just me.
The results of the poll, by the way, 553 votes so far, 62% Zion Williamson, 38% DeAndre Ayton. And then I put this poll, which I had put very early in the season. Suns fans, how would you describe DeAndre Ayton's rookie year? The empty stat line or DeAndre Greaton? I will say the first time I put this up months ago, the empty stat line won like 60-40. Right now, 53% DeAndre Greaton. 47%
wow.
Empty stat line.
I mean,
wow.
And I know you've had a lot of fun with that nickname on him too, but the Phoenix Suns have 17 wins on March 19th.
Pretty much everybody
who's put on a uniform this year, Devin Booker included, and you know how big a fan of Devin Booker I am. Pretty much they all are empty stat lines.
That's a good point. That's fair. There's some truth in all that. I just don't get the blanket defense when it's so clear to me that there could be so much there to be had. That's it.
And I still see the so much there to be had.
Okay.
And I think it will be accomplished.
Ticket Window Tuesday opens now.
All right, caller number, Bick. How about 16 or 10?
Caller number 10, Vinny.
All right, caller 10 for the number of rebounds DeAndre Ayton has loafed his way to per game this year. It is Ticket Window Tuesday presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. Caller 10, 602-260-9870. You'll win a pair of tickets to see comedian Aziz Ansari next Tuesday at Comerica Theater. Plus, Peoria Sports Complex training tickets. Again, caller 10, 602-260-9870. Coming up, the Cardinals are officially meeting with Kyler Murray today in Oklahoma. What do you think they're talking about? We'll get into some of those possibilities next. It's Bickley and Murata, live from the Ok Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It is the Tuesday edition of Bickley and Murata, live from the Ok Chin Community Studios. 38 days is, I think, the number I looked at, the official count, until draft day, day one, April 25th in Nashville. The Arizona Cardinals with the number one overall selection, really diving into their preparation. They did not attend Kyler Murray's pro day in Norman, Oklahoma, but according to various reports, including one from Adam Schefter, they are in Norman, Oklahoma today, meeting with Kyler Murray, the former quarterback of the Sooners, Heisman Trophy winner, and doing their diligence on maybe acquiring Kyler Murray as the number one overall selection. If you believe you put any stock into the mock drafts, the recent mock drafts, and the names attached to those drafts, Kyler Murray has been the overwhelming connection between the Cardinals and that number one overall pick.
Yeah, and I think the more that I hear, the more you can see why. The more you can see what happens every year happening now, the vortex of interest, it starts spinning around and around, and pretty soon you've got a full-blown tornado. The person I spoke with who identified two elite-level traits that Kyler Murray has, it's kind of really, I can't get it out of my head because it's got me thinking that maybe, and you can tie this directly into DeAndre Ayton. When you take what you think is real and what's happening, yet is that really the case? And does he really fit what you're doing? The two attributes, the quick release and the fast twitch nature of his quarterbacking, the always being on his tippy toes. A lot of people have noticed this about him. He's that quick of an athlete. So to me, it's kind of like maybe people now have gone, this guy's perfect. Now I get why he had all that success at that size. Because that ball gets out as fast as any NFL quarterback, and the dude never backfoots any throw. He's always moving somewhere. If that's true, if these are really transcendent abilities, then it makes you go, okay, this is why this kid never lost a game he started until senior year in college. This is why he's a Texas high school legend. That all kind of funnels into the Cardinals are taking this guy. But who would be surprised if you found out the Cardinals traded this pick? If you found out they didn't want Kyler Murray, would you be shocked?
If they traded the pick, if they did not take him. I won't be shocked either way at this point.
Neither do I.
There was a time in this process where I would have been shocked had Kyler Murray been the pick, and it was pretty early on. I'm past the shock level. They are a team that is trying to shake things up. They've already done it with a coaching hire. They're thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
So at this point, nothing will shock me.
Okay, and I bring this up about things that are repeated, things that are out there, a line of thinking that sort of becomes accepted as fact. Now, we're seeing this with Kyler Murray and national observers declaring he's going to be the number one guy. Headline in the New York Post. Okay, headline in the New York Post. This happened at 7 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Headline, Cardinals get closer to draft-changing Kyler Murray decision. It's a story about Kyler Murray, and the quote they use is Steve Keim saying, is Josh Rosen our quarterback? He is right now, for sure. Okay, that quote is weeks old. Yet, Kyler Murray is such an attractive clickbait kind of topic that people are generating Kyler Murray stories.
Yes.
And in it, they're perpetuating this, he's their guy. I don't know, man. Like I said, I am not as confident as other people are that the Cardinals are going through with this.
I think that headline is actually accurate, though. I don't think the Cardinals are going to move away from this meeting when they decide to get back on the plane and head from Oklahoma back to Arizona. I don't think they're going to be further away from their thinking on mm-hmm. Kyler Murray. They're going to have a clearer picture of what type of person he is. And I think Cliff Kingsbury already knows a lot of that. Along those lines, Doug and Wolf have been doing a great job getting guests on that do have a working knowledge with Kyler Murray. Another one of his former high school coaches, Dick Olin, was on with Doug and Wolf this morning, and they talked about a number of Kyler-related subjects. And here's a pretty good soundbite from Dick Olin on this.
He's a great kid, and I hope that Arizona does the right thing. Kingsbury missed out on him once. I hope he gets him this time.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thinking. That's, you know, look, he coveted this kid early, and now he's got a chance to get him now that he's an NFL head coach.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is just, it's such a powerful thing, and you've got to believe that Cliff Kingsbury's into it. But what if Cliff Kingsbury is more like Igor Kokoschkov? Grateful to have a job, stoked that he ended up in the NFL after getting fired, and in no headspace to start saying, all right, this is what I really need to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. More on that particular Kingsbury missing out. Here was Dick Olin with Doug and Wolf talking about Kyler Murray's visit to Lubbock to during his senior year of high school.
I took Kyler his senior year to Texas Tech to coach Kingsbury. And they were trying to recruit him at that particular time. And there's a guy out there named David Rye, who I knew from Iowa.
Yep.
And David Rye, you know, I told him, I'm coming out to see him. So I took Kyler out. I stayed with Dave. He talked to Coach Kingsbury, and it was a great experience. And Kyler fits that offense.
Yeah, David Rye also on the Cardinals coaching staff as well. Here's more from Kyler Murray's former coach on the fit.
Yeah, in my opinion, heck yes, I'd take him number one, especially because he's a fit. Mm-hmm. Look what he did at Oklahoma. What Coach Riley does at Oklahoma is very similar to what Coach Kingsbury does. And, I mean, if that wasn't a fit, I don't know what was. I mean, the guy, he can make that offense work, and it's a question. He's got arm strength. He can make every throw. I mean, there's no question about that.
Regardless of what happens on April 25th,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of this Kyler Murray stuff has taken, at least for me, put the attention on him where he ends up, the whole quarterback position. But one of the things that I'm most anxious to see in a good way, I want to see what Cliff Kingsbury's offense looks like, whether it's with Josh Rosen or Kyler Murray at the controls.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how different, how revolutionary, how innovative this is going to be, because that's another thing that everybody's talking about in this whole process, is the unknown of it. How much is he going to be able to tweak? And we've seen some tweaks in the offensive thinking of a lot of coordinators and head coaches in the league, but Cliff Kingsbury seems to be a guy that is going to tweak it a little bit more, that is going to advance that whole evolution of offense, which is long overdue, in my opinion.
And that's the part of the story where last year, Steve Wilks got criticized because he tried to institute a system, but he didn't have the right players for the defensive system.
Mm-hmm.
That's the argument for Rosen versus Murray. Can Kingsbury really be effective next year if he doesn't have the right quarterback?
Yeah, no, that is million-dollar question. He came in and he showed them a plan of how he was going to get Josh Rosen better. I'd love to hear that presentation. I'd love to go, wow, yeah.
Don't That's you feel like they're going to have to resell Josh Rosen to the fan base if they don't
there
wind up taking
no
Murray at this point?
No doubt about that.
Well,
and that's the other side of this story, that if Josh Rosen is the guy, the pressure on him now to validate the team trading away Kyler Murray or the chance to draft Kyler Murray, that he's going to wear that.
Yeah, I mean, to answer Jared's question, I think they would have to resell it to part of the fan base. There's a good number of Cardinal fans that feel like Josh Rosen, if this happens, is going to be done dirty. I have shreds of that feeling. Like, I do kind of feel bad for him that his one opportunity to shine in Arizona was marked by ineptitude around him. He contributed to it, but there was just I don't think anybody was going to win here last year with everything that was
no,
in place.
I agree.
But on the flip side of that, I say, you show me where there's loyalty in the NFL. There's not much.
It's a business about
winning football games. And if the Cardinals come to the conclusion after this conversation today with Kyler Murray and in their prep leading up to April 25th that Kyler Murray is their guy to give them the best chance to win football games, Josh Rosen's going to find another home. And I still, for as hard as I was on Josh Rosen last year and as unimpressed as I was just basically individually with his performance, I still believe he's going to be a good NFL quarterback somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
I believe he's got the makeup for it.
And you know, I believe that. You heard me talk about it all last year. I think that, and I heard Doug kind of say this morning that, you know, the Cardinals have to find out if this guy can handle the pressure of being number one in the draft, because there's a lot that comes with it. It's a big weight you carry.
Mm-hmm.
I look at him, I go, dude, where's number one? You choose number one to wear as your jersey number, you're making a statement of how good you think you are.
Always believed that.
Yeah. Clearly. You're not going to pick number one if you're the kind of guy who's going to, no. I mean, it's very narcissistic. But a lot of great athletes do that. That's me. I'm number one.
Did you ever pick number one on any of your sports teams?
No, never.
Me neither.
Never.
I tried to pick triple-digit numbers. They wouldn't let me. Have you subscribed to the Bickley and Murata podcast? Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android. You'll never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Murata podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. Coming up, we hit some NBA floor burns and a few former Suns point guards were in the news for different reasons last night. We'll let you in on all of it next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Floor burns with Bickley and Murata.
Russell Westbrook, Oscar Robertson, Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jordan, Elfrid Payton. Those are the only five players in NBA history to record triple-doubles in five straight games. Elfrid Payton turned the feat last night. 19 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds Monday in a 129-125 overtime win at Dallas, which ended the Pelicans' six-game losing streak. Elfrid Payton, five straight triple-doubles. During that stretch, he's averaging 15 points, 12 rebounds, and nearly 13 assists per game. Elfrid Payton was in Phoenix with the Suns last year.
Yeah, he didn't look like that kind of player to me,
did he? He had a few triple-doubles while he was with the Suns.
Started off well.
Started off well and then really tapered off, as most point guards did during the season.
Yeah.
Does that change your thinking that maybe the Suns missed the boat on Elfrid Payton?
No,
I don't think so either.
I thought he was kind of a goofy player. I didn't find him all that dependable, but yeah, hard to argue with. But then again, here we go. Numbers. Numbers aren't always the impact. Impact aren't always numbers. Sometimes they're one and the same. No, I don't think so. I do not think so.
Now, Alvin Gentry had nice things to say about Payton, and kudos to Alvin Gentry for not calling a timeout at the end of that game that he didn't have. To be a point guard and be able to come up with double-digit rebounds night after night, that is really tough to do. Anytime they mention you in the same breath as Westbrook, you have to feel really good about it. If they mention you in the same breath as Oscar Robertson, that is a whole another whole area. So, unbelievable accomplishment.
Yeah,
because
it really
normally,
is.
Even if it's only numbers, Bick, you normally don't see a player of Elfrid Payton's profile reaching numbers like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's historic stuff. That's like Linsanity type stuff. Jeremy Lin, if you just started watching basketball right now, you might have a knowledge of Jeremy Lin. But what he was able to do while he was in New York, when he burst upon the scene, that was one of those examples of a player not of a certain profile hitting these historical marks. It was fun to watch, and I guess you could say the same thing for Elfrid Payton as well.
I wonder if in this era of offensive explosion in the NBA, if a lot of these numbers aren't getting almost devalued. And I'm not just talking about the James Harden kind of scoring numbers, but the league is very, very wide
point.
Open now.
It's a good point.
I mean, there might be something to that, because Elfrid Payton, historically, that's a rare streak he's on. But he's Elfrid Payton.
He's still Elfrid Payton. Some of the scores last night wasn't off the charts, but that game 129-125. The Raptors scored 128. Cleveland scored 126 in beating the Pistons. You see a lot of these high-scoring games, so that is true. Another game last night, the Denver Nuggets went into Boston and beat the Celtics 114-105. In that game, Isaiah Thomas came off the bench for the Nuggets, played 7 minutes, didn't score. But it was Isaiah Thomas's night.
Mm-hmm.
At long last, after he's changed uniforms three times since leaving Boston, he finally got his tribute. And I don't know if you watched the video. The Celtics did an unbelievable job in putting that video together. It was pretty emotional for everybody involved, and you could see it in Isaiah Thomas's face. For a guy who did not spend much time in a Celtics uniform, three seasons, they love Isaiah Thomas in Boston. But it also led to this. This discussion on ESPN, Michelle Beadle joined on a panel with Paul Pierce and Chauncey Billups. And one of the reasons why this was delayed so much after Isaiah Thomas's exit from Boston was that Paul Pierce had a celebration planned on a night where Isaiah Thomas's team was in town. And Paul Pierce said, you're not going to do this on my night. Chauncey Billups actually brought this up on the air, and it led to an enlightening slash awkward conversation between the two.
Paul's last play in the Garden. Look at IT right here. Say, go ahead, Paul. Go ahead and get your shine on so they can give you a standing O.
Wow, that was perfect.
Just go ahead and do it. That's what IT did.
He challenged my shot right there.
A 5'9 guy can't challenge a shot.
He basically just
But look at this. Look at him.
The game is over, John.
The
game is over. The game is over.
Look who gives him love.
The game is over.
Mm-mm-mm.
We're down.
But when it was IT's turn.
Wow.
For you to give him love.
It was IT's turn to give
him
love.
When it was time for you to give him love, you didn't let him get a tribute video.
That's not
Come on, man.
Now listen.
This dude let you get your last bucket off at home.
Trip to Boston, he chose not to take his
Beach.
Tribute.
He got a tribute video tonight.
Don't be on TV putting on me now. Don't use
Beach.
This platform to say.
That's three jerseys.
Don't use this platform, John.
That was three addresses ago.
Like, I'm the bad guy. Come on now.
But it is interesting how he showed you such respect in your final seconds.
I'm not going to let y'all sit up here and double team me. That's my night. If you don't like it, then...
There he is. There's the Paul we love.
There's my guy.
I think.
At least Paul Pierce is consistent. He's not backing off of it. And even though you watch the video, and you can't see it, obviously, but you hear Chauncey Billups describing it. Paul Pierce in his last game in Boston as an NBA player was with the Clippers. And last seconds on the floor, Isaiah Thomas goes out to kind of half-heartedly challenge a shot. Pierce knocks it down. Crowd goes crazy.
Uh-huh.
And Paul Pierce is beloved in Boston as well. He should be. I'm on team Isaiah Thomas on this one.
Me too. I've told this before. If you get honored, especially by an organization like the Boston Celtics, you take it whenever you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. None of this. I don't want to have to share with this. I don't want to have to do this on this night. Can't you carve out a night for me alone?
And if there's a player,
I mean, you talk about an organization that is. Banners hanging from the rafters.
Yeah. I can't think of a player really who went from MVP candidate to afterthought because of an injury, even though he came back from the injury, faster than Isaiah Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch that tribute video that Boston put together, some of the voiceovers that the play-by-play guys were doing, they were using descriptions of he's not human. He's on a different level. And if you remember back to that 16-17 season in Boston, that's how good Isaiah Thomas was.
Yeah.
But they traded him.
Yeah.
And in the time since he left, and he couldn't get through the playoffs that year because of the hip injury that he tried to play through, Isaiah Thomas has been limited to 42 games in the NBA in two seasons with three different teams. It's awful.
It's kind of sad.
It's really sad.
Yeah, really is.
And I know Isaiah Thomas, outside of Boston, hasn't had the greatest reputation in the NBA, but he's a guy when he was with the Suns for a short amount of time. I liked his presence. I like what he brought to the team.
So did I. Swagger, just everything. He just would not be denied. The chip on his shoulder is just insane.
Yeah. And he was decent for the Suns coming off the bench. He averaged 15 points a game in that half year. And here's where it gets painful. When the Suns made the determination that they were changing their point guard blend on that trade deadline day, Isaiah Thomas for Marcus Thornton and a first-round pick that turned out to be Scalabissiere, who was involved in the Marquise Chris trade. Yikes.
Yuck. Yuck. That's all I got to say.
All right, we got an hour to go on this Tuesday. It's Bickley and Murata coming to you live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.